A bailout for GM, Ford, and Chrysler may be on hold, but it's important to remember that back in September, Congress already allocated $25 billion to U.S. automakers. That money is restricted. It's for companies to develop new energy technology. Well, Tesla Motors is one of the small companies hoping for a slice of that $25 billion. Yesterday, NPR's John McChesney told us about the electric car Tesla created. Today, how federal money may help keep it on the road.
That's the sound a Tesla Roadster makes when you turn on the key. And other than a soft whine and the rush of wind, it's about the loudest sound this car makes, as I discovered on a test drive.
Goodness gracious, I would get into big trouble with this car.
The acceleration of the Tesla flattens my back against the seat as the car seamlessly gathers speed. No shifting gears, no exhaust blast. While the Tesla Roadster is quiet, it hasn't gone unnoticed by the automotive world. The Roadster has proven that electric cars don't have to be wimpy and can have a range of over 200 miles. Dan Neal writes about the automotive industry for the Los Angeles Times.
With electricity, you can make it in lots of different ways. You can't say that about gasoline. You can make it with wind or solar or hydroelectric. The infrastructure for electricity is already established.
Still, widespread use of electric cars would require new infrastructure. For starters, you need a lot of charging spots, especially for people who don't have garages where they can recharge at night. Shai Agassi is CEO of a Silicon Valley startup called Better Place, and he hopes to build a lot of that infrastructure.
If you went to New York City and you said, I'll just park the car and I'll plug it at home, that means a cord from 23B dropping all the way down to the avenue downstairs. And if you're lucky to find your spot, you need to move it every night.
Agassi envisions curbside charging meters with his company taking care of the billing. And Agassi says his car chargers will be designed not to overload the grid.
And the system will tell him, it's okay, when I have power, I'll give it to you. Then you're going to start getting cars charging at 2 o'clock at night. Nobody needs to set it up like your VCR, but you get cars charged at 2 o'clock at night when there is power available.
Sound like pie in the sky? Well, the Israeli government has bought into Agassi's scheme in an attempt to replace gasoline in that country before 2020. And now, nearly every car manufacturer is developing an electric car or a plug-in hybrid. GM is bringing out the Tesla-inspired Chevy Volt in limited numbers by 2010. And Renault-Nissan is ready to offer a lot more, says the LA Times' Dan Neal.
The vice chairman of that company said they could build 40,000 electric cars by 2011, and by 2012, they could double that number. This is an astonishing assertion from a company as serious as Renault.
The fact that foreign car makers are leading the way in new technology is no surprise to critics of America's big three auto companies. And while the electric car crowd isn't enthusiastic about giving $25 billion in loans to Detroit, they are pleased that 10% of that is earmarked for small manufacturers. Tesla CEO Elon Musk is hoping startups like his will get a piece of the action.
It really would be a travesty and a shame if Tesla didn't get at least a tiny sliver of that. I think Tesla's frankly going to put it to better use than the big three.
Auto industry analysts like Dan Neal say that at the very least, the government should not give new loans to Detroit car makers so they can simply continue the combustible technology now burning down the town.
I think there's a rich opportunity for the Obama administration to seize the moment and say, yes, we will bail you out, but you have to provide the transformational transportation of the future. And we are not going to give you all this money just so you can make midsize and full-size Buicks.
And what about those Silicon Valley startups that have reignited interest in the electric car?
Yes, maybe Tesla needs a little federal help to get on the road. I honestly think that these companies will not make it out of the wilderness without some federal help.
And that's because startups like Tesla seriously underestimated just how much capital it would take to ramp up mass production of a new car. Now, policymakers in Washington get to decide whether the insurgents, as well as the incumbents, should get a boost. John McChesney, NPR News, San Francisco.
That was a piano, but playing Guitar Hero doesn't necessarily seem like something that would add to the problem of climate change. But all those hours spent with the Wii, the Xbox, the Sony PlayStation, they use up a lot of energy.
Americans spend over $1 billion each year to power up their video game consoles, but it doesn't have to be that way. That's the finding of a new report out today from the Natural Resources Defense Council. We're joined now by the NRDC's Noah Horowitz. And Noah, can you give us a rough sense of exactly how much electricity these video game consoles use?
Yes, when you add it up nationwide, these video game consoles are using as much electricity each year as the entire city of San Diego.
That's a lot of electricity. And you note in your report that part of it is that it's not like your TVs where when you're done using it, you turn it off. People kind of forget to turn these games off.
That's exactly right. And they're completely unaware that that thing will continue to chug away at near full power all day and all night long. It's like bringing two new refrigerators into your home each year and paying the electric bill for them.
Now, I'm not an avid gamer, Noah, but I think part of the problem here, too, isn't it that sometimes you can lose your place unless you leave that video game player on?
That's exactly right.
Do any of these video game players have a function that would automatically turn things off, like much the way that your computer goes to sleep? Is that an option?
Buried in the menu of these devices, there is this auto power down feature. It's really important not only when you're playing video games, but if you play a movie and forget to turn off your game console, that thing's going to continue to chug away at 100 plus watts.
The overall number of video game consoles in the U.S. has been increasing. What about the machines themselves? As they get more high tech, are they using more electricity to run?
The Nintendo Wii has stayed around 20 watts. But the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 have become souped-up computers. They now have internet capability. You can play games over the internet. You can download and play movies. As a result, those use a whole lot more power than the prior generation.
There's an environmental impact of this, too. What does all this electricity use mean in terms of carbon dioxide emissions?
If we just get people to turn off their video game when they're done, we could cut our nation's electric bill by about $1 billion. And from an environmental point of view, if everybody were to do that, that's like removing all the global warming pollution from the cars in San Jose, which ironically is our nation's high-tech capital.
So how do you get people to do that? What are you calling for consumers to do?
We hope people will turn off their video game once they're aware, hey, I'm spending over $100 a year to power something that I'm not even using. Secondly, we want the game industry to get together with the people that make the games and find a way to automatically save the game and your place so when it does go into sleep mode, it wakes up just like your computer exactly where you left it.
And what about the gaming industry? Have they said anything in response to this? Are they willing to work with you?
Our study, quite frankly, has served as a wake-up call to them, and they're listening. And we're hoping that the next generation of video games will be a whole lot more energy efficient.
Noah, do you yourself play video games?
I'm actually a former player of Pong, but I haven't graduated to the current generation of video games.
Noah Horowitz of the Natural Resources Defense Council, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Alex Cohen.
And I'm Madeline Brand. California is hosting a preview of next month's Global Summit on Climate Change that'll take place in Poland. Yesterday, the 800 attendees from around the world in Beverly Hills heard from President-elect Barack Obama in a taped video message.
Once I take office, you can be sure that the United States will once again engage vigorously in these negotiations and help lead the world toward a new era of global cooperation on climate change.
President-elect Barack Obama. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is hosting the summit along with four other governors, including Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius. She joins us now on the line from Beverly Hills. Welcome to California.
Thank you, Madeline. Nice to be here. It's a beautiful day.
A beautiful sunny day. Well, what's likely to come out of this two-day meeting on climate change?
Well, I think it's a continuation of certainly discussions American governors have had with one another. There are lots of regional agreements moving forward on targets for carbon reduction and efficiency measures, and often we've been battling with our own Environmental Protection Agency, but continuing to move forward. But this really gathers partners from around the world. We have representatives from China and Mexico, Canada, India, various South American countries here to highlight the fact that this issue is a global issue that we all need to collaborate and cooperate, and that America wants to be part of that dialogue once again.
Now, your state, Kansas, you vetoed an expansion of coal-fired plants, which was popular at the time in the legislature. And you said at the time, I support pursuing other more promising energy and economic development alternatives. What are they?
Well, in Kansas, we have enormous wind assets that we're just beginning to tap and harness. And not only is it an opportunity for power in our own state, but gives us an export opportunity once again to share our prairie winds with states around the country. So that's an enormous asset that we're just beginning to take a look at. I'm also a believer that before we build any additional carbon-powered power in Kansas, we really need to take very seriously energy efficiency and conservation measures, which we've begun in a major way, but we really haven't reached the level that we can in terms of really lowering energy consumption and allowing our existing power to stretch much further into the future.
Let's talk a little bit more about wind energy. As you probably know, the Texas billionaire T. Boone Pickens recently abandoned his plan, at least temporarily, to go for wind energy and supply a lot of it because it's just too expensive. And right now with this economy, it's just not doable, he said, to go ahead with this plan. So what does that mean for your idea of pursuing wind energy in Kansas?
Well, I think one of the cost issues will be greatly enhanced by having some comprehensive energy policy at the national level. Right now, there's no question, coal is cheaper than a variety of other sources because we don't put any price on carbon and we don't have any way to have a market value for what we're doing to the environment and to people's health. With a cap and trade system, with a realistic price on carbon, and I think that that's really what we need. We need a comprehensive national policy to essentially give incentives to production of alternative sources, to conservation and efficiency measures, and actually put a penalty for producing new carbon, and because we have a huge price to pay if we continue to wreak havoc on the environment.
Now, you are rumored to be on the short list to run the Environmental Protection Agency. Do you want the job?
You know, I think that we need talented people in this administration. Certainly, the new energy future is a passion of mine, and I have been working on it at the state level and will continue to do that. I haven't had any conversations with President-elect Obama about specific jobs.
If he approached you, would you say yes?
I don't deal a lot in hypotheticals. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, and I certainly want to be helpful in any way I can to make sure not only he's successful, but that we get this economy back on track.
Kathleen Sebelius, Governor of Kansas, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to talk to you, Madeline. Thanks for asking me.
From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook. Large parts of Southern California are burning today. From Santa Barbara to Los Angeles to Orange County, wind-driven wildfires have destroyed hundreds of homes. Thousands of people have taken refuge in evacuation shelters, and flames continue to threaten homes and major power lines into the region. The worst of it is in the neighborhood, the northern L.A. suburb of Sylmar, where a neighborhood of 500 mobile homes was wiped out. NPR's Carrie Kahn reports.
In the middle of the night, the police woke up Scott Warnick and told him he had to leave his mobile home park in Sylmar. Warnick grabbed what he could before jumping in the police car. He said he could see the flames rolling down the nearby ridge.
We've always had fires. Never like this. Not with this kind of wind, not with this kind of ash. Not this close to our home.
Warnick and hundreds other from the Oak Ridge Mobile Home Park were brought to the Sylmar High School gymnasium. They've been glued to the television, sitting on wooden desks under the basketball hoops, and the periodic updates on the fate of their homes.
We've got an update right now from the fire department. We want to let you know what's going on to our best ability. So, Captain Ruda, let me turn it over to you.
Los Angeles Fire Captain Steve Ruda's face was covered in ash.
As you can see, we just came back from the fire line, and I don't have good news.
Ruda told residents that firefighters stayed as long as they could, but flame walls topped 50 feet high and hoses were melting in the concrete due to the intense heat. He said almost all the 600 homes burned to the ground. Residents gasped and many began crying aloud. Ruda also was overcome with emotion as he held up a badly burned American flag he had taken from the scene.
Now, we brought this from one of the homes because we wanted to bring this to you as a sign of hope and bravery for the firefighters that were there and who are still there making the best they can under the conditions.
The situation was also tense at an area hospital where flames caused a power outage and forced nurses and doctors to evacuate critical patients in the dark. Intermittent power outages have hit several neighborhoods throughout the day. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa pleaded with residents to conserve energy and not run major appliances.
We need everyone to conserve power today. If the fire threatens the lines of bringing power into the city, we may have to move to rolling blackouts.
The loss of so many homes is a milestone in Los Angeles firefighters' stellar record in fighting wildfires. They haven't lost a home in years. Scott Warnick rested at the shelter at Sylmar High School and tried to come to grips with having lost his home, his sister's home, and his entire neighborhood.
There's a lot of people homeless today. I don't know what we'll do yet, but we'll figure it out.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I don't know whether to laugh, cry, or stomp my feet or have a temper tantrum. I just don't, you know. Not much I can do about it. Just do what we can.
L.A. police have cordoned off Warnick's mobile park and declared it a crime scene. Officials would not give any more information, but arson investigators were reported on the scene. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has declared all of Los Angeles County a state of emergency. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Sylmar, California.
Now to Inspector Paul Hartwell with the County of Los Angeles Fire Department. We have him on the line. Inspector Hartwell, where are you?
I am sitting at one of the Los Angeles City Parks in the city of Sylmar, El Carrizo Park, where the command post is.
Can you see the fire?
I can see the east side of the fire. So the fire is burning from where I'm looking west towards the city of Santa Clarita.
What does it look like to you? How does it compare to others you fought?
Well, from where I'm sitting now, it looks like every other brush fire that happens in the Angeles National Forest. But what we experienced starting at 10:30 last night was a whole different animal. I mean, we had wind 70, 80 miles an hour. It was hot. It was dry. And we lost numerous structures just through the night, which is something that doesn't normally happen. We lost upwards of 600 homes last night.
You're one of a few people who can actually get close to this thing. What is it like? What does it sound like? What does it look like?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. You really have to take all parts of your senses when you're fighting one of these fires. It sounds like a freight train. It has that roar to it. Your vision when the winds are blowing this hard is relatively down to zero where you can't open your eyes. You can feel the heat. Even if you're a long distance away, you can still feel that reflective heat from the flames. I mean, I was in my car this morning at 2 a.m. driving on the 210 freeway, and I could feel the heat through the glass of the windshield. The vision was down to zero. I couldn't see past my hood, and it looked like a lava flow or a waterfall of sparks blowing across the 210 freeway. It was really incredible.
Now, if you all are calling in reinforcements?
Yes, we are. Currently, right now, at 11:30, we had 1,100 firefighters on scene of the SARE incident, and we've asked for an additional 700. We've asked for 36 strike teams, and each strike team has five fire engines involved. So there's five fire engines and then a battalion chief that drives the Suburban who's in charge, and we've asked for 36 of those. So it's about 700 people.
So, Inspector Hartwell, how long have you been out there so far?
I got here at 2 this morning. So I've been going on 12 hours.
And how long do you expect to stay at the fire?
There is no end date as of right now. We don't know. Really, fires like this that happened all through the fall, you know, through Christmas, the wind is going to dictate how long all of us stay here. Safety is our priority. No life is worth losing over a structure or a brush. So they're emphasizing the safety factor. If you do get tired, they do let us go offline. But, you know, we got to stay here. This is what we do. This is our job.
Inspector Paul Hartwell, he's an engineer and a public information officer for the County of Los Angeles Fire Department. Thanks very much, sir.
You are very welcome.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary. A wildfire is tearing through the foothills north of Los Angeles at this hour. Wind gusts of near hurricane force are fueling the blaze in the suburbs of Sylmar and Porter Ranch. Dozens of homes have burned, thousands of people have been evacuated, and power lines are threatened. NPR's Carrie Kahn joins us now with the latest. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning, Lynn.
Carrie, what is the situation? Describe the situation for us now.
It's pretty chaotic out there. We're talking about the northern edge, northwestern edge of Los Angeles in the valley areas. And these winds, as you said, are as high as 76 miles per hour. That's almost hurricane strength. And we just saw a press conference with the mayor and fire officials where they could barely stand up. Their hair was blowing and they're trying to talk to reporters and the wind is just erratic out there. These winds are terrible. These are the dreaded Santa Ana winds that come at this time. They're hot, they're dry, and the firefighters, Los Angeles County, Los Angeles City are trying to fight this fast-moving fire, which has already burned more than 4 square miles. It's jumped 2 freeways, shut down traffic in this very congested area out there in the northwest. It's a critical situation right now.
Now, at that news conference, the mayor said that power lines are threatened.
That is a big development and a very scary development. He is urging and he was pleading with citizens to conserve energy today. These are huge power lines that come from the Central Valley over the mountain pass and drop down into the valleys into Los Angeles and bring a large amount of power into the city. He said if there is damage to these lines, then there will be rolling blackouts throughout Los Angeles. So it is a very critical situation right now.
And drought conditions are making things even worse?
This is the problem. It is very dry here. This is almost Thanksgiving. No rain in sight. Reservoirs are already very low throughout California. Water managers in the state just last month told local water districts that they would only be getting 15% of the water that they have requested for next year because reservoirs are already low. So you have these helicopters and these huge aircraft, water-dropping aircraft, that are already dipping into these bone-dry reservoirs. It's a terrible situation. There is a fire still burning out in Santa Barbara that we covered extensively yesterday. Some of those aircraft can dip into the ocean, but they've also been dipping into the reservoir out there in Santa Barbara. And again, city officials were pleading with people to conserve water because they are running dry.
Now, as I understand, some 5,000 people have been evacuated already. Where are they going? Where are they being taken care of?
There are high schools that are being opened. The Red Cross opened 3 shelters. People are flooding into their shelters. There was a terrible situation in a local hospital the fire burned on the edge of the campus, and that was about after midnight. This is in the dark, and it caused an electricity outage. And so they had to evacuate people from the emergency room. They were taking ambulances to other hospitals. They had 10 neonatal babies that were rushed out to another hospital. It was a very terrible situation in the dark and late at night in this terrible winds and the horrible breathing conditions out there too.
And of course, all of this is taking place as California is facing a pretty severe financial problems also.
We have, but the governor has insisted that no cost will be spared in fighting these fires. He's made that very clear.
All right. NPR's Carrie Kahn. Thanks so much, Carrie.
You're welcome.